Well, hello and happy new year. 2015 already. Hard to believe, isn't it? I hope you had a really good Christmas, and I'd like to welcome you to podcast number 25, which is the start of my third year. It's funny, when I first started these podcasts, I didn't really sort of assume that they would just go on indefinitely. It was just something that I thought I'd try to see whether people liked listening to it and whether there was any value in it. And I'm pleased to say that increasingly, it seems people are enjoying listening to these podcasts and are tuning in on a regular basis to see what the latest chat is all about. So if you're one of those, if you're a regular, welcome back. And if you're new, I hope you're going to discover the delights of listening to this podcast and go back and investigate some of the others. As you may realise, I've now also lodged this with Podbean, as well as directly from my website. So there's more than one way to get access to the podcast. And hopefully it'll make it a pleasant experience for you. December, of course, is always the busiest time of year for us performers. And it's always the same for me. I always find that weeks 2 and 3 in December are when nearly all the shows seem to sort of congregate. I often do sort of 1 or 2 shows in the first week and very little around Christmas itself and virtually nothing immediately after Christmas. And then I always have something on New Year's Eve. But it's those sort of weeks 2 and 3 where I seem to be rushing around all over the place like a mad thing, trying to fit in a ridiculous number of bookings in what seems like a ridiculously short amount of time. It's a pity people don't just spread it out a little bit and make it all easier for all of us. But I had a good December, and the shows all seemed to go really well. I was actually quite lucky because I had one venue which booked me for 5 nights, which for different Christmas parties that they were doing on each evening. And although it was up in Bristol, which meant I had an hour and a half drive to get up there, I really enjoyed working there. And it was a very nice venue. And interesting that going back to the same venue night after night, the venue, of course, stays the same. But the mixture of the people and, if you like, the atmosphere that those people create was markedly different from one night to the next. It's quite fascinating, really, depending on the mix of people. The age of those people, particularly, can make quite a big difference. And that's something that you don't normally pick up on, because if you do lots of bookings in different venues every time, then, of course, what you don't know is whether the ambience of that particular night is what it's always like in that venue, or whether, in fact, that's very unusual for that venue, because you're not there often enough to know. So doing sort of 5 bookings in a row like that really gave me a view on that. And it was interesting how it varied. So if you did lots of shows, I hope they went really well for you and that you felt it was a successful Christmas. And now, of course, we can look forward to a new year, 2015. One of the things that I rather enjoy doing on my Facebook page is about once a month I'll post a question. It's usually something to do with something performance related, let's put it that way. And the idea is just to engage those who look at the Facebook page in some sort of a conversation and get their opinions. And recently I posed a question about whether magicians value the content that they find in a printed book more than they value the magic content that they find in an ebook. Because these days, of course, there are so many ebooks available. I mean, you've only got to look on something like library.com in the States. And Chris Wasuba's got just so many titles now, which you can buy as a download in digital format. But there are still, of course, books printed, less than there used to be, but there are still quite a lot out there. And it seems to me, certainly from my perspective, I don't know whether it's my age or just what I'm used to, but I still have to say that I do prefer having a physical book. Or at least, put it this way, I prefer to have a physical book if the content of that book is something that I value, that I really want to keep and perhaps refer to a lot. I mean, for instance, with my own ordinary reading tastes, I enjoy reading books about 20th century history, and particularly centering sort of on the Second World War era, sort of 30s, 40s and going into the 50s. And if I buy a new book about the period, then I nearly always buy it in hardback, and I'll buy it in in that format, because I like to have the physical book on my bookshelf. I like to be able to refer to it. And the same applies to magic books. If there's what I consider to be a major work, then I would much rather have it in a sort of physical format, especially hardbacked, than I would have it in a digital format. Whereas if I'm going to do something like read a novel that I'm probably only going to want to read once, something like reading on a plane or a train or something like that, then I'm quite happy to buy a digital version for my Kindle and just read it in that format, because to me, it doesn't have the same sort of value. So I put the question about whether magicians have the same feelings about their magic books. And certainly from the books that we review at Magic Scene, I've noticed that the quality of the printed books is generally higher than the quality of the e-books. I don't necessarily mean the content, I just mean the way that they're put together. The standard of editing, if you like, of spelling, layout and all the rest, is usually inferior on the ebook level, unless they're taking a book that has actually been printed in the past and they're simply dropping it down, if you like, onto a PDF. But if it's being designed specifically just as an ebook, then quite often I find that the workmanship that goes into it is actually quite shoddy, if I'm honest. Whereas if somebody's going to invest their hard-earned money in a hardback book, then they tend to make a lot more effort to make sure that it is as good as it can be. It was interesting, really, because I sort of got a view from the responses that I got on my Facebook page that people were a bit ambivalent about it, really. Some people preferred to have a hardback book and some didn't. But I didn't get the impression that it was the actual content, which is what I was really trying to get at. Do you value the content more in one than the other? It didn't seem to be the case. It was, you might want to have a hardback book, like I've just expressed, the need to have something nice on your bookshelf and to have something pleasurable to hold in your hand while you're reading it. But the actual content, for most people, I don't think can get the impression that they minded whether it was in digital format or not. I suppose one thing that could put you off ebooks is the fact that if you spend in your job, for instance, a great deal of your time looking at a computer screen and reading off a screen, maybe the last thing you want to do in your leisure time is to read more stuff off a screen. And if you think about that, we access on our phones and tablets and so on as well now, a time when we would perhaps turn to a newspaper, we're now looking on those sort of digital formats as well. When you come to something where it's pure pleasure, reading a book, perhaps people say, do you know what, I'm going to go back to actually having the magic book physically in my hand. I mean, it's interesting that we sell, with Magic Scene, we sell far more physical copies of the magazine than we do the digital ones. And yet you would think, wouldn't you, that for the convenience of a magazine, which some people would certainly consider to be more throwaway, you would think perhaps people would go for the digital. But certainly in the case of Magic Scene, they don't. They seem to rather enjoy having the glossy thing drop in with a great thud on the mat once every 2 months. So it's interesting, really, isn't it? Whether the content's any better. I certainly think that more effort, as I mentioned a moment ago, is sometimes put into a physical book. But that's not always the case, of course. So maybe it's just a question of maybe your age, what you feel you're used to, and what gives you the most pleasure when you're reading it. It's funny, isn't it, how we sometimes take things for granted. Even something that's really, really good, we can sometimes become a bit almost sort of blasé to it because we're so used to it being good. And there's a thought that struck me the other day when I was looking at Magic Week, Duncan Trillo's weekly updated website, and I suddenly noticed that he'd now done in excess of 750 issues. So for nearly 15 years, he's been producing every single week on time a newly updated magic information site. And loads of people use it. I mean, if you want to find out what's going on in the magic world, in the way that in the old days, before the internet, everybody used to buy Abracadabra magazine, Good Lifts magazine. They always used to refer to themselves as the eyes and ears of the magic world. And really, Don Contrillo's Magic Week, for certainly for UK magicians, has become very quickly, actually, in some ways, it almost helped to put the final nail in the coffin of ABRA. But it was symptomatic of a change in the way that people like to get their information. As the internet became strong, then Duncan put the effort into making up a website that everybody could access for free and which would enable them to get all the up-to-date information. So I just want to take my hat off to Duncan, really. I know he listens to this podcast from time to time, but that's not the reason I'm saying this. The reason I'm saying this is because I think it's an amazing achievement to keep something like that, such a commitment. And I'm sure that we just sort of log on, don't give it a second thought to the amount of effort that it must take, and just the week-by-week commitment that it takes Duncan to put it together, to keep it all going, and to make sure that he maintains the high standard that he set himself. So well done, Duncan. May you continue for many years in the future. And I'm sure we all really appreciate all the efforts that you put in on our behalf. At home, I've got a little plastic container. And in this plastic container are all the props that I load into my performance suit when I'm going to go out to do close-up work. And I keep them in this container so that I know that when I tend to take everything out of the jacket, and the waistcoat and the trouser pockets, I take everything out when I come back from a show because I don't want to sort of spoil the cut of the suit. But and then I put it all back in again fresh each time I go out to do a show. And by keeping all those things in a container, it means I know that I've got everything that I'm going to need. So most of the time, the tricks that I'm doing does vary slightly depending on what the event is. But basically, the core tricks are going to be the same. And some of the tricks I've been doing for 25 years. But there are other tricks which every now and again, I suddenly find myself wanting something new. And just for my own sanity, apart from anything else. And I was thinking the other day about how I decide on what trick I'm going to bring in that's new, because for me, one of the most important things is, will it fit the props? Will those props fit in my suit? Because if there's some prop that won't fit or that I can't easily carry, or if that prop, I can carry it, but it means I've got to actually take out something else that I regularly use, and I really don't want to do that, then I find that I will discard the trick, almost irrespective of how good that trick is. On the other hand, if, as happened to me recently, I came up with a really nice, strong effect that used a prop that I was already carrying on me, well, absolutely wonderful. It meant I only had to carry one extra small item, and I had the other main prop with me and carried it with me all the time. Suddenly, I had a new trick. And so it went straight into my act, if you like. And actually, this particular trick was one of the hits for me this December. I did it repeatedly, and it went over really, really well. And I sort of refined it. I started off with having a routine that was slightly longer. But as soon as I started to perform it in sort of real conditions, if you like, I realised that it was slightly too long. And that the extra bit, if you like, that I'd added on the end of the routine, which I'd really only added on because I wanted the trick to reset itself. And by adding this extra little segment of the routine at the end, it did that. And I realised that actually that wasn't helping the trick. It was almost like an anticlimax at the end of it. And so I found another way to make it reset itself. But it's kind of fascinating, really, because that trick, if I hadn't had the prop that I needed, the main prop I needed for this trick, if I wasn't already carrying that, I probably would have never done that trick. Because I would have been carrying something else in the pocket where that prop went, in which case I would have had to have removed it in order to do the new trick. And so I probably wouldn't have done it, in which case I would have missed out on a really strong trick. So I don't know how you do this. Maybe you rotate the tricks that you do. I think the trouble is that basically every time I go out to work, it's for a fee, and therefore I want to give my best. And I don't really want to be experimenting with something. And so naturally enough, you tend to gravitate towards the things that you know you can do absolutely anywhere, 100%, and that you have total confidence in. And so for a new trick to break in, it really has got to be something special. But sometimes when you do that, as in the case with this particular new trick, I was pleasantly surprised. And now I'm finding it's one of my real go-to tricks already, the one I do the most often, which is interesting. And then it wouldn't have happened at all if I hadn't already been carrying the prop. Yeah, there you go. See, on such little things. In my February 2014 podcast, I mentioned about responsive websites. If you're not quite sure what that means, essentially it means that when you access a website with your normal computer, your desktop, then most websites, the way they're designed is so that you can see it at its best on that site, on a fairly large size screen. But of course, as soon as you start trying to access it on, say, your mobile or on a small tablet, then there's an awful lot of scrolling is required and an expanding of the pages in order to be able to read it. And so what a responsive website does is that when somebody logs on to your website, the website looks at the whatever you happen to be using to access the website, whether it's a phone, whether it's a tablet, or whether it's a desktop. And then it will change the way the website looks to make sure that on the smaller things that you're using, such as your mobile phone, you don't have to do untold amounts of scrolling or enlarging of the text. And it's very difficult to go around a normal web page on a smartphone. Whereas with a responsive website, it will change the format and make it into one column, and therefore it's much better user experience for the person accessing your website. Now, the thing for me was I was thinking about this because the number of people who are using their smartphones and small tablets in order to access websites is gradually on the increase, of course. And I was kind of waiting for the point where it kind of tipped so that more people were using those small devices than were using the desktops. And certainly not so much for my Mark Leverage Magic website, but for my performance website where I'm advertising my strolling magic and so on, that particular website, I've been keeping an eye on that one because I think that is one that people might be using their smartphones to access. And if they do, I want to know when we get to a point where lots of people are wanting to do that, because then I wanted to have a responsive website made for it. So I was looking at some analytics, and it turned out that in the last 12 months, 21% of the people who accessed that website did so on either a smartphone or a tablet. So the national trend is that it's just tipped that more people are now using those smaller things. But on my particular website, only 21%. But that's going to get more. There's no question about that. But what was really interesting was that of those 21% who accessed it with their phone or tablet, not a single one went on to then make an inquiry. So in other words, all the inquiries came from people who were looking on my desktop. Now, you can look at this two ways. Either it means that because the format of the phone was too small and the website wasn't responsive, it was too difficult for people to make an inquiry, and so they didn't do it. I mean, they may have then gone to their desktop and made an inquiry from there afterwards, but at the time they didn't make it. So it could be that, or it could just be that the people who were looking weren't enamoured by what they saw. But I tend to think because absolutely no inquiries came from 21%, I would guess that probably the difficulty of trying to make an inquiry, because people have to fill out a form on my website to give me all the details. It's not just a question of sending me an email. In fact, my email address is hidden. It is on the website, but it's not hugely obvious, because I don't want people just to send me some email saying, how much do you charge for a wedding? You know, that's no good to me. I need to know more information, and I'd rather get that information the first time. So that's why I use an online form. So I've decided to, and it's just been done at the moment, have a responsive website made, in order to see whether this will help people to make an inquiry with me using their smaller devices. And it'll be fascinating to see once that's up and running, which it should be very soon, whether the statistics then change and whether I start to get inquiries, and indeed whether more people start to access the website using those smaller devices. It was back in January 2011 that I launched my eClub Pro. At the time, I was looking for a format in which I could almost like ring fence my output so that I could pass it on to interested people in the form of a sort of an online club. And there are 10 different sections, sort of which are hidden sections available only to members, and which are on my website, and which are updated on the first of each month. Some of those sections, about half of them, are added to, they're augmented, and the other half are the material is actually changed on it. So it has almost like a rotating amount of stuff for you to see. And I've been really pleased with the way eClub Pro has developed. It's just starting its fifth year, and I'm really proud of the amount of material there is there, and what it can offer to anybody who is interested in enjoying either their hobby or their semi-pro or pro career in magic. And I was looking at especially the pages where the material has been added to, it's been augmented rather than replaced. Something like the toolbox, which is a section where there is video instruction and a whole range of useful moves. I see that there are now 52 different moves that are covering sort of all sorts of different types of magic that are currently in the toolbox for people to access. There's a section called the Vintage Vault, which is complete routines, which I've taken from my notebooks from years gone by. Often I've sort of updated or improved them, but the thing they have all in common is that none of them have been filmed before. Well, there are now 48 of those for people to view. I mean, that's an awful lot of material, and it covers mentalism, close-up, stand-up, children stuff. There's something for everybody. And then there's the instruction locker, because of course I've been around quite a while now as a magic dealer, and when I first started there was really no facility for providing any sort of video instructions with a lot of stuff. It was all printed stuff, and then certainly initially just with drawings, and then it went to photographs. And now, of course, a lot of people just do DVDs, just whether it needs it or not, to be honest. But I decided that it would be nice for members to be able to have access to a range of my marketed products which don't currently have video, and to provide video instruction for them. And currently there are 25 different effects which members can access the video instructions for. There's another section called the Lecture Room, in which I present bites, around about 10-minute bite-size segments from my lectures. And you can actually, in that room, you can currently watch the complete lectures from Going Walkabout, which is one of my most recent lectures, the Celebration Lecture, which was one that I put together when I'd been in magic for 25 years. The Magic Party, the children's one, Games and Magic. There's a stage lecture, which had five items that I did in the United States 2 or 3 years ago. There's Close-Up Encounters, which is a close-up lecture that I presented around the clubs way back in 1984. Yes, it's vintage. And the one that's currently running, and I'm just adding to at the moment, is the Magic Circle Lecture Dem, which this particular recording was done in 1991. So it's quite a really interesting stuff there, and interesting to see, actually, I suppose, how I've changed as well in the way I present things too. And then there's the Advice Centre, which gives people two questions about magic I give 200-word answers to each month. There are currently 108 different questions that I give answers to, with two more added every month, so that's a very interesting section. And then my eVideo newsletter, which all members get for no extra payment. The main sections of that's the teach-in, where I teach a move or a routine. Wrinkles, which is video instructions for alterations, different ways of doing my marketed products. 60 Seconds to Success, which is roughly a minute of targeted advice on some magical topic. And It Could Only Happen Live, one of the most popular sections, which is where I tell stories about funny or horrendous things that have happened to me over the years as a pro magician. All of those, there's about 40 of each of those currently archived away, as well as Mark's monthly message, which is another thing that members get in the middle of each month. Members get sent a sort of roughly about a 10-minute video in which I talk about and give opinion on a particular magical topic or subject. So there's a huge amount, and that's just the stuff that's augmented. There's also all the stuff that's replaced as well, free downloads and various other things, and all for only £8 a month. I think it's fantastically good value, and I'm really, really, I say really, really proud and pleased with the way it's going. Go and have a look at the at my website, where it'll give you all the information about all the various sections, and perhaps consider for this year joining. There's no fixed subscription period, so you can stay for as long as you like, and at only £8 a month, it does give tremendously good value. And that's eClub Pro. One of my close-up shows that I did this December, just gone, it was on about, must have been about 2 hours before I was due to set off to go to the venue. I got an email from the office of the company that I was going to be entertaining for. And the person in the office said, I assume, Mr. Leverage, that you'll be bringing your public liability insurance certificate with you to the booking this afternoon. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's the first time, as far as I can remember, I think it's the second time. There was once a few years ago, but certainly in recent times, that's the first time I've actually been asked just whether I've got one, never mind whether I was going to bring it or not. Do you have public liability insurance? I mean, quite frankly, what's the worst that can happen? I might give somebody a paper cut with the edge of a playing card and they might sue me. I don't know. You know, what's the worst that can happen? We're not fire eaters or juggling with chainsaws. We're doing card tricks and coin tricks. However, nevertheless, for years now, I have had public liability insurance. And the best one to get, in my view, is the one that you get as part of your membership of Equity. The Equity insurance is underwritten by a major insurance company. It's got £10 million worth of cover. It covers all the things that you need. And you get it as part of your annual membership, which is a fantastic bargain. If there was ever a reason to join Equity, that on its own, apart from all the other benefits that Equity can bring, that on its own is worth the whole membership fee. Because if you do ever get asked, it's great, because the actual certificate is, each time that you renew your subscription with Equity, your actual certificate for your public liability insurance is updated. And so on this particular occasion, when I knew I had to have this certificate, you just go to the Equity website and you can download your current certificate, and I send it as a PDF within minutes, and the job was done. So apart from the fact that it's actually quite good to protect yourself, just in case, you know, you're using the finger chopper or the spike delusion and something goes wrong, then you're covered. Or at least, you know, you've got somebody some insurance company who could pay out in the event of you losing the claim. But certainly, if you haven't got that, I would really advise you to take a look at the Equity offer. Isn't marketing amazing? The way that some companies create a brand and an image for themselves is quite astounding, I think. And one of the examples that I particularly admire is Costa Coffee. Now, the coffee culture in the UK has got bigger and bigger. We used to be all tea drinkers, and now we've become, I think, more coffee drinkers. Although, of course, we all like a cup of tea as well, I suppose. But so much more of it is coffee, and especially drinking coffee out or taking coffee away in those styrofoam cups. Has become something that most people have seen walking around either with a bottle of water in their hand or a coffee. And Costa have managed to, and I suppose Starbucks, who were perhaps the first ones to come from the States into the UK, but certainly Costa Coffee is the one that you notice particularly, have expanded hugely. You can go into some service stations, can't you? And they have several different stations where you can buy the Costa Coffee, because they've realised that making these specialty coffees does take a little while. It's not an instant, I'll have a coffee, bang, there it is. It can take a few minutes, so sometimes you get a bit of a queue. So they've even gone to the extent of making several different places where you can buy it, everything from the machines to actually sort of attended service at different stations. And yet they charge a hugely exorbitant price, as well as the upsells. A biscuit for £2.29. Really? A cake for £3 or £4, one single cake. It's incredible. And yet they get away with it because they've created a brand and a product that people perceive to be something that they really, really want. And therefore the price is justified. And what that makes me think is, if we market ourselves as magicians in the right way, we can charge good prices, higher prices, provided that what we have and the way we actually deliver what people think they're booking is of sufficient quality. Worth thinking about, isn't it? You know, if you worry about your fees being too low and you want to put them up, what's your brand look like? What car do you drive? How do you dress? Everything about the way you do business with your clients, does it say that you are a quality performer or not? Well, the Costa or coffee effect shows that if you do put it in the right bracket, you can get away with much better prices and make more profit from your particular brand of magic. Right, so that's it then for the Generate podcast. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the content. If you were out recently at a riotous New Year's Eve party, either working or otherwise, and you have yet to recover, I hope your recovery will come soon. And I look forward to being back here and chatting to you again next month. Bye for now.